Anyways, this is number three, and newsletter number three, and it's a report on things. I said, a lot of formalism is dropping away, but the basic practice remains. You just do the awareness of awareness and dyad and report what comes up to your partner. At our most recent session, some worked with a physical object, some just responded to the instruction, be aware of awareness, common at will, and we still use the 5-minute bells for managing the dyads. And everybody's state went up. You could see the whole room rise in less than a half an hour. Just boom. Heavy troubles just went away, boom, like that, without even dealing with them. A few of us kept flashing on what was happening long after the dyads were over and most of the people had gone home. It was actually a very exciting time. I was getting a lot of visual phenomena. I remember a bookcase and the people in the room looked like modern art. And I actually looked in an art book and found a couple of things that matched what my experience was subjectively. One was a portrait of Matisse by André Derain. It was really close. Another one, there was a one by Kandinsky called Arab Cemetery. It was really rich and it had vibrant colors and had these dark lines, and it was really very druggy in the experience. And we weren't taking any drugs. This was strictly from doing the dyads. Some people reported the following, or one person reported the following. He says, the instruction become aware of awareness seemed much more effective than individual issue or problem-related instructions. The intention to become aware of awareness seems to drill directly into a state of presence or awareness of universal intelligence. Mark gave a good explanation of the dynamic nature of this universal intelligence. His analogy of a detergent that dissolves things, for example, rigid mind structure, seems true to me. I suspect that once one brings this universal intelligence into present awareness, things will manifest quickly in the life of the person holding that awareness. I suspect that one's internal and external life would spontaneously reorganize to better align with the universal intelligence. And then somebody sent me something from after reading the newsletter. It said, the dog's in is hot. I printed out both newsletters and I have been trying to mock up a dyad by myself. My particular Enneagram consciousness fixation came up immediately, then dissolved. That was fast. I like how active it is, not sitting there remote on your tuffet. I would like to come to a class next time I'm in California and perhaps work on the phone with you for a few short snippets. I'm buying. The form we've been using to experience all this, of course, was the dyad, and you know, the partner relationship is so powerful and it helps to keep you really focused. And we love the contact. And it's good to communicate what comes up so that the ideas don't get stuck in your mind and act as a barrier. So doing the consciousness of consciousness exercises in diet is awesomely powerful. But I think, on the other hand, that you can get quite a lot of just imagining being in a diet and doing the exercise or not even doing that. Maybe you could just tell the universe, or just be present in the universe, and just know what's coming up for you and let go of it. It's easy to let go of things when you're in the awareness of awareness state. Or you could tell a friend or something. And I was encouraging people to try that on their own. After doing 3 or 4 dyads, you probably don't need the support of a dyad anymore. You pretty much get what it is you're up to. Once you get the experience of it, then I think you can just, you're in a place where you aren't depending on any specific situation, such as a dyad, to plug into consciousness of consciousness. So I don't think we should assume we need the dyad once you get it rolling. You could just move into the view whenever you want to, naturally, without doing anything special. And I made a list of the things that might help you get into awareness of awareness or consciousness of consciousness. One thing is to be in an undistracting space. Another one is to have your body relaxed. Another one is to just be silent. stop intending to think, stop intending to communicate while you're actually doing it. One I thought of was remain in the mind as it is without trying to do anything. Let go of any limitations that you can let go of. Don't chase after or follow after anything, any actions in your body or anything that comes up in the mind. You know, don't follow any desires. Just hold this gentle intention to be in undistracted presence. And put your attention on space helps. I know the Tibetans do that. They'll go on a mountaintop and just stare at an empty space. And resting in this space. Sometimes they characterize it as looking outward with dead men's eyes, where you don't become attached or entangled with anything you're looking at. You're just resting in this space. And of course, be open to experiencing the essence of mind, or the deepest part of that experience. And of course, just always detach awareness from what it is aware of, and be aware of the awareness itself, which is kind of at the heart of the practice. So then I wrote this little thing, which is sort of, I don't know why I wrote it, but I did. When residing in stillness, stillness of mind and body, there is the experience of empty space and clarity, just pure consciousness in union with this space. There is no perception of self. There is just this primordial, naked awareness. Whatever arises in awareness arises in this space. There is a constant flux of energy as events move into this space. There is a continuous, unimpeded ingression of novelty, and this gives rise to the impression of a flow of events in time. Ordinarily, when events enter the sphere of awareness, there is a cascade of reactions, many levels of reactions, thoughts and feelings, in the mind and body. These reactions spawn other reactions and others and so on. Like a great bell that has been rung, the nerve system keeps reverberating from these impressions. Within this flood of reactions, there's a single error, utterly simple, utterly subtle, and inevitable. This error is the mother of delusion and suffering. This error is the root of unenlightenment, and it creates the opportunity for enlightenment. See, the original impression you get is utterly simple and perfect. Before immediate intrinsic awareness is tricked by the flood of reactions, which is the heart of this unenlightened state, there is just this pure suchness of the way it is. There's just the as-it-is experience. There is no description of the original because labels come later. Prior to the first thought, there is just this direct experience. There are no stages to go through to be directly aware because there's nothing that makes things the way they are. You shouldn't try to cure one thought with another thought. Instead, you simply detach awareness from what it is aware of and be aware of the awareness itself. The root unenlightenment ceases at that instant and everything self-liberates. There is just pure awareness, nakedly aware. This is what we call the view. There is a dissolving of separation and no separated individuality remains. There's no personality, no being, no life. There's just as it is, the as it is state. And you don't have to prepare for this in any way. There's no getting ready. Pure awareness is already here as the truth. There's no reaching for something or attaining something over there. The this that you are experiencing right now with ordinary awareness is the this that is always here and now. And prior to the first thought, there is only this. And frankly, when one is deeply sucked into a world defined by their reactions, there's still only this. It's just sometimes hard to see. But everything liberates in this fundamental nature. And at a certain point, you realize that everything is already liberated in this fundamental nature. So that was the end of the third newsletter.